07.
You are listening to Two Magicians, One Mic.
Hey everybody, it's Two Magicians, One Mic. My name is still Nick Paul, that's and Simon Cornell.
I continue to be Simon Cornell.
Hey, remember when we said we were going to do two episodes a month?
I faintly remember something about that.
This one's going to come out 2 days late because it was supposed to be in the 1st and the 15th.
Yeah.
But you were on a magical boat cruise.
That is the literal truth. I always love how it keeps coming up when I say things like, I was to someone who's not a magician going, I was hanging out with some magic friends the other day. And they go, magic friends. It sounds so exotic and enchanting.
It's not even a reference to being magicians. They're just magical in your life.
They just make magical friends in the woodlands. Mm-hmm. And we throw rainbows at each other.
They're all elves.
Exactly.
They have hairy feet.
Isn't that hobbits? I don't know.
I feel like that's just Americans. Including myself in that. So this has come out a couple days late, but that's okay. We're almost efficient.
That's right. Let us know if you were annoyed it came out late. I'm guessing no one will be annoyed that it came out late.
I don't think anybody will even notice.
I still don't know who listens to this. It's amazing. Like, to the people listening to this, thanks. Like, thanks. I salute you. Like, I'm glad this is...
They have no other options. And they're like, well, I guess we'll just put play on this one.
They're like, we need an existential magic podcast in our lives. There's one. It's this one.
It's the only one. Yeah. We got to say thank you. We got a few extra Patreons.
Oh, yeah.
And that's not even BS. You know, like, we literally have people giving us money every month now because they like the podcast. So if you like the podcast, give us money. Give us like $2 or $3 a month. That's like almost a cup of coffee at Starbucks.
And we will work hard on continuing to provide you with quality existential magic content. I'm slightly worried that now we've sort of leant into this whole The Existential Magic Podcast subtitle.
And we won't be existential anymore.
Or I'm worried we'll lean too far into it and it'll just be us moping about the futility of existence for 45 minutes once or twice, maybe a month. I don't know.
What is a deck of cards, Simon?
What is it? See, that's actually an interesting question. I've thought a lot about that.
Damn it.
This is the problem.
I think it's really my fault because I get you going and then you go down a rabbit hole of nonsense and I'm just a yes man. I go, yeah, that makes sense.
But by the way, given that we have a couple of topics, but it's pretty freestyle, I think, this month. Briefly, on what is deck of cards? Think about, rewind a few hundred years and imagine the art of magic at its core is about separating people's perception of reality deliberately in certain ways from actual reality itself, right? Misleading about the coin is, they think the coin's in this hand, it's actually somewhere else, and boom, you get the illusion of the coin vanishing because you could mislead them about the actual configuration of reality in front of you. Cool. Now, the problem with something like a coin, it can either be in a place or not in a place. You've got a lot of limitations on what you can really do with that, and it's a difficult thing to hide. And if, say, you rewind before playing cards existed, imagine playing cards never existed in the world, and you went, man, I want to design an object or an item that you could use to do magic, that was really conducive to misleading people about the nature of its actual situation that you can then use to create amazing moments. You could not design something better than a deck of playing cards if you tried.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, there's a whole bunch of them. There's enough of them that it feels like a very random array of choices. They're all the same on one side. They're all different on the other side. Like, US bills are easier for magic because they all look the same more or less when folded up. Canadian, Australian bills don't work for that because the color difference makes it harder to do magic with them. Like, they all look the same in one way. They all look really different in the other ways. They're thin enough that you can't always tell how many are in a stack. They're like face up and face down. You can't tell easily because of the white borders on most styles. Like, they're flexible, which means they can have a bit of a bend, which means their shape can change, but people don't think of it as changing. Like, from
I've
one side,
this
they're,
much about from, a deck of yeah, cards before, and I've been doing magic.
One
since
side, they're
07.
Thin, and then they're big. Like, you couldn't make a better tool for magic if you freaking tried. And we just lucked into this. And not only that, the fact that they're now the Illuminati, like the magic Illuminati, seeded them throughout the world so that they would be instantly recognizable to anyone nearly on Earth in the first or second world, and made them tools of gambling and fortune telling so they have intrinsic emotional significance and resonance to people of like money won and lost and fortune sold. That it's insane how perfect they are for Magic.
Yeah.
Like, we lucked the F out.
Yeah.
With playing cards existing.
It's very true. I mean, many people's careers are part of it. I'm working, last night I did the Magic Bar in Encino, and I'm doing it again. And Ben Schrader, who runs it, has a great intro to everybody. He kind of serves some drinks and sets everybody down. And he mentions, I forget how he words it, but it's like, he talks about, you come here to see a lot of more close-up Magic. And you're basically seeing objects in space move differently than you expect them to. And it's just a great description of close-up.
That's beautiful.
And it fits exactly what you're saying. Everybody knows a deck of cards. They know what they do. But what makes it special, seeing somebody do an amazing card trick, is the unexpected nature of how those objects can be used.
Completely. It blows my mind sometimes how much just Magic would barely exist without playing cards.
Well, it's proof that human creativity is kind of boundless.
Yeah.
Because it's one thing. It's 52 pieces of paper that people have made into entire two-hour shows. Yeah. You know?
And that there is still constantly, to this day in 2018, a fire hose of new playing card based Magic being developed and invented and discovered. It almost makes me think about that philosophical thing about mathematics. Like, is mathematics something we, humanity, invented, or is it a property of the universe that we have discovered and are exploiting?
Yeah, that's fascinating.
And it's a really interesting open question. And it depends on really how you define both those things, and it's a whole field of philosophy. And like, sort of card Magic is almost similar. I love the idea that as soon as a deck of cards existed, all of card Magic also existed, and we're just now discovering it. We're slowly peeling away at the possibilities. And it's weird to a non-magician, they'll be like, what do you mean? You pick a card and you find it. What else is there? But to magicians, it's a universe of different kinds of effects and different kinds of routines and methods and principles and presentations and different riffs on those principles and constantly new stuff.
Well, they just released Stephen Hawking's last paper.
Oh, really?
He put out, a couple of his months or just before he died, and just talking more about black holes and quantum mechanics, and you realize that they're just scratching the surface.
Oh, yeah.
Of all that.
Oh,
I pretend to understand it. I don't.
Yeah.
But you realize it's the same thing as what you're talking about. Like, are we just peeling away at these things that exist, or are we just making brand new discoveries?
Yeah. I still remember Richard Feynman, physicist, one of the greatest human beings I think has ever lived, had this great quote where he was asked, he was one of the people who really, really pushed quantum physics forward back in the Einstein years and everything. It was really pushed forward a lot of quantum theory. And he was asked at one point by an interviewer, the perpetual quest in physics for the theory of everything, right? The unified theory that will all tie together all the different particles and forces and make the whole of the universe make sense. And he was asked, like, are you hoping, Mr. Feynman, are you hoping that the theory will be a simple, elegant thing once you eventually get it down to its core? And he said, I don't care. Like, I'm not here. I'm not hoping anything. I just want to find out where it is. Like, hoping gets in the way of seeing it objectively and being open to what it is. Like, if it ends up being a simple, beautiful theory, that's great. But if instead it's just like an onion with a million layers, so be it. We'll just keep unpacking the layers one by one.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever it is, let's just keep – we're just looking. We're trying to find it.
I think that's the biggest thing about science too, that non-scientists or non-science-minded people can't comprehend.
Yeah.
And Neil deGrasse Tyson's new book talks a bit about that too, where he's talking about the correlations between astrophysics and the military and human or government progress and technological progress, all these things that go back to astrophysics. And you realize that the scientists are really just there to discover and learn, and like you said, peel back the layers of the onion. And the non-scientist types are, we need this for either destruction, or we need this to make money, or X, Y, and Z. And it's funny how those two sets of thinking have
What's also the core thing that I admire about actual true pure science, as opposed to like BS science that's like quote unquote science theme, but not actually, and it's usually about money or military or whatever, is that science is about being not just comfortable, but embracing perpetual uncertainty. Never ever knowing
it's
anything.
It's a very Zen Buddhist thing, if you think about it.
And most normal people are very uncomfortable with that, and that's to their detriment. It's very unhealthy to be uncomfortable with uncertainty. But you notice most people need to. Do you think ghosts are real? I mean, I don't know. Probably not. But, like, certainty is a ridiculous idea in the face of the universe around us on the micro or the macro scale. Like, you can't be certain of anything. Like, you still have to make choices based on what you think is most likely. Mm-hmm. You know, do I think the room, the building outside this room exists? I don't know for certain. I'm going to assume it does. But that doesn't mean for a second I am 100% absolutely certain of anything about reality. You go, yeah, I'm certain enough to make a judgment call on it because we've got to get through the day and survive and reproduce and do our evolutionary human things that we're encoded to do. But
oh boy.
It got there.
That one got deep. Anyway, let's keep it simple. You're going to Las Vegas, Las Wages tomorrow, and to open for a little group called Penn and Teller.
Little magic duo. They got a little show over there.
I forgot
there.
You haven't done that yet. Yeah. You taped that like almost a year ago.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's been such a journey because it was 2 years ago I went on the show the first time and did that fateful routine and no, you didn't fool us. And then, you know, for regular listeners, all know the story. Still haven't finished the blog article. Might never happen. Who knows? And then, yeah, got brought back for the first and only time it's ever happened on the show to go, we were, and I quote, we were wrong. You fooled us. That's a quote,
if that's
direct
not on the front page
word,
of your website,
quote.
I'm
going
to punch you in the face because that needs to be like the first thing people
we
see.
We were wrong. You fooled us. And this was because I was just doing this show up in Bloomington that we mentioned last time that went really well. And Chad, the director, decided to – he wanted to use a clip of that in the show, of that exact quote. We were wrong. You fooled us. So I've heard that repeatedly.
Is this your opening clip?
No, it's halfway through the show. I tell the story in the
show.
Good.
Yeah, because if you open with that, that's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, no. we tell it halfway through the show. We sort of do that trick and then tell the story bookending it. And it actually works really well.
That's great, yeah.
And so I've heard that. Yeah, so we were wrong. You fooled us. And so now I didn't even really think about it at the time that, you know, by Nevada gaming law, I've now won, quote unquote, the contest, which means I get the prize, which is going there to, I actually don't know if it's opening or closing or just being in the show. I actually have no idea.
Usually
exactly.
It's opening. Like they've done it in the past. I've seen people open.
Okay, yeah. Cool. Yeah. I have no idea. I just know
they've
I go.
They've told you nothing. You're doing the show tomorrow.
I mean, to be fair, I didn't ask. I'm just like, cool, whatever. Yeah. This is going to be great. It's every involvement I've had with them in the show has been fantastic. So I'm not, unlike going on most other TV shows, I'm not worried. It's not even a TV show right now. It's actual, real, honest, good old-fashioned live entertainment.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
So I'm bummed I was supposed to be in Vegas.
Yeah, that would have worked out so well.
I was supposed to open, or like I said, fill in for Greed Juggler. Jeff Svilko, he has a residency at Paris, and a week before he calls me, he's like, I'm really sorry, man. Caesars Entertainment told me I can't use any more magicians because apparently they're opening some sort of like magic castle thing upstairs at Bally's or the Microsoft showroom, I believe it's called.
Yeah.
And he's like, really? He's like, I'm so sorry. I didn't
That's
see this coming.
That's a weird choice.
So just bad timing. But I still want to support you. So
hey, it's cool.
Maybe I'll just show up anyway.
I mean, I'm down. Let me know if you need a comp. I can still get people in.
Oh, I'll talk to the wife.
Yeah. I mean, let me know.
She'll probably want to come too.
I think unless they didn't give me a limit. I think it's unless I sort of, you know, try and get 24 people in.
Oh, really? Cool. Yeah. I would think so. It's like you've won this prize, so can I bring at least
you get
a
four
friend?
Tickets that would be kind of dickish.
Well, it's funny, you're in Vegas. I was supposed to be in Vegas. My brother's on tour with a band right now. They're here, and then they're going to be in Vegas on Thursday, so it's like the universe is telling me I need to be in Vegas for some reason.
Clearly, it's meant to happen.
It's or not, I don't know.
Who knows?
I'm just making it happen. So that's fun. Cool. Yeah, that's going to be a weird experience.
Yeah, it will be. What I like about it is I was thinking about this and I'm actually not nervous. He says humble bragging, but no, because I'm nervous about plenty of things, but the thing I love about this is there's nothing at stake. I get nervous when there's something at stake that I don't know. I'm not confident is necessarily going to work out, like a new routine.
Yeah.
I want it to be great because for all the reasons, I don't know if it will because it's new and therefore I'm nervous. I just don't know. Or if it's a big gig for a new client, I want to work with them more and I'm hoping I'll impress them and I don't know, right? You just, no matter how good you are, not everyone's impressed. Whereas here, like there's nothing at stake. I'm not competing for anything. I'm not whatever. My job is to do the one trick that at this point I can probably do more utterly reliably than almost anything else in the repertoire. I have zero, like, it's never impossible that you'll have a brain fart and screw up, right? Failure is always possible with no warning. Absolutely. But that's okay. I'm not worried about that because that's true of anything in life at any time. Right now, a meteor could hit this apartment and we all die. You know, the...
I got dark.
I mean, it's a possibility. It's unlikely.
It's true.
And that's the, watch out. No. And the odds of me screwing up that poker chip routine at this point feel comparable to that meteorite hitting us.
You're talking about something, too, where you're in a state of confidence. So you're less – not in a cocky state, but in a I've done this 1,000 yeah. times confidence.
Exactly.
In that you're less likely to screw up
yeah.
because you're just in that steady frame of mind.
Yeah.
I tend to mess up things when I'm in the more nervous spot or something weird will go on where I'll forget like – I'm doing the egg trick and I'll forget which hand I pick it up with first.
Yeah.
Is it the right or the left? I literally couldn't remember yesterday. Yeah. I was halfway through the routine going, I think I'm right.
Yeah.
But it's just – it was in a state of unsure. Yeah. So.
Actually, that makes me think of – because I'm now thinking about – and I do this all the time. It's thinking about, okay, how could this go wrong? Where could we screw this up? Because all those stories about people just suddenly – like industrial accidents. You're just using the bandsaw and then suddenly, boom, you saw your hand off. Like without a moment's hesitation.
Sure.
Around, you know, or people just slipping and falling, breaking their neck and dying on a staircase. Like, it can, at any time, something can go randomly, catastrophically wrong.
Simon's getting laughed at
and
right now.
Laughed at by the peanut gallery and the audience in the room. But I think about that because, I always have, 1% of my brain running in the background on just make sure you don't, massively screw up or die randomly from something dumb and easily avoidable.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have a bunch of power tools in the apartment. I do a bunch of, power tool work. And every now and then I realize, if I didn't follow the safety precautions right now or drop the power saw in the shower, I could get electrocuted. These things happen. And I don't dwell on it, but I just kind of just make sure you're not about to, look both ways before crossing the road, wear your seatbelt in the car, et cetera, et cetera. Just watching out for massive failure cases, including going on Penn & Teller's show. It's like there's no obvious ways it's going to go wrong, but thinking, what if the audience doesn't connect? What if I overthink it and choke on stage and suddenly forget how to do the trick? And
it's weird because, you can be – I struggle with this a lot because I think that's why I'm always on a somewhat state of anxiety with performing, where it's like – I literally had the thought the other day of I've done this thousands of times. Why is this the one time it's going to fail? Why am I nervous that it's all going to fall apart this time? I think that just comes from the uncertainty. You never know what's going to be thrown at you.
Yeah.
But I think it's just wanting to do a good job too suck.
Do you find that even with sort of say the stuff you were doing in Macau that you really have done thousands of times now? Or do you notice it varies the level of anxiety?
If I have those routines still in the show, even though I've altered them here and there and kept kind of tweaking them, specifically in a longer set. So I'll open with one that I've done a million times. So I can open with something I'm confident in,
but
sneak something in the middle that I'm confident in, and then close with something I'm confident in. So the newer stuff or the stuff I'm less confident in my abilities of, that's when I can worry about it and really zone in. And then I'm like, oh, okay, I'm doing the egg trick now. Great. I can take a 3-minute mental break.
Right. Okay. So, so it's not like you have universal chronic anxiety about everything performing wise. It's
only leading up to shows.
It
really gets bad sometimes and it's getting better. Reoccurring shows I do here in LA aren't too bad. I don't get too nervous, but corporates, private parties, I've had a couple of requests for private parties this week, and the gratification I get in already being booked or not being able to do it and passing it along to another friend is it says a lot about how I shouldn't be doing private parties
because
I get so nervous because you're in somebody else's space.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's usually a fancy Beverly Hills adult party, but you're in their house and that's weird.
And that also means the space is unique and it's so each space has its own different challenges. Each audience is different.
You don't know if these people came expecting to see a show or if they came just to party or they came, you don't know how you're going to get treated. It's just such a different thing. And when you do a corporate too, it's such a different thing of, you're getting paid really well. But you don't know, once again, if these people came expecting to see a show, if you're a surprise, if they just want to get the hell out of there. I was doing a gig last week with David Kovac, and it was an after dinner show, and we thought we were going to do 40 minutes, 50 minutes straight. And they go, can you break it up to 10-minute segments in between serving of food? And I go, is there any way we can't do that? And he's like, yeah. No. So I said, okay.
I love that that was two requests disguised as demands disguised as requests. Yeah. Can you break it up? Can we not? No, you cannot not.
And
no,
the best is like, he's like, oh, and after dessert, can you do another short set?
Wow.
And I'm like, why would anybody want to keep watching this show after dessert? Like, everything's done.
Yeah.
And I said, kept my head down, and I was a team player and did it. And sure enough, by the third set, people were kind of – luckily, yeah. I was tag teaming with my buddy David, and he went on, did a longer set for the third one. And you could tell they were just like, really? The show's still going on? And then I came on, did a quick set, and the guy comes up to David after. He goes, yeah, maybe you guys are right. You think? And it was like one of the few times I've ever wanted just to really put my foot down and go, I've been doing this for 15 years. This is the only thing I know how to do without any ego or douchebaggery in that sentence.
Really,
that's
the
truth.
Yeah. It's amazing how that. It's so funny how, again, to anyone working in entertainment, that's a tale as old as time.
Sure.
Like, that's not even
something. In a private party situation.
Yeah. Or corporate event, like, where someone thinks, oh, yeah, this will be, with no experience in doing it, right? They think, oh, no, this would be great. And every time they're just moronically wrong. And almost never do they listen. It's like, it's like spending lots of money for a jar of like really exotic fine grain mustard that's been artisanally carved and made. Like, you know, it's like a $200 jar of mustard. And they're just rubbing it on your balls. Just completely like, that's not what this is. That's not how to use this. Why are you spending that much money on this? Buying a thing and they're just completely wasting it. By making it a crappy, doing
it. I think a lot of it's just like, we got to get this thing. We got to get the band, or we got to get the magician, or we got to get this piece of entertainment so everybody's happy. And then you get it, and then they forget about it.
Yeah.
And they go, that'll take care of itself. When really there are many. You realize it going into tech. Like, I was working on Just a Woman's live show 2 weeks ago here. He's doing a residency at the Roosevelt for 3 months.
Mm.
And if you can see it, great. Sold out through December, which is pretty cool. Wow. It sold out really quickly.
Nice.
But like the amount of time we spent on tech, just like lighting little things, tiny details to make the trick better or to amplify what was going on, you realize all of this doesn't happen at a private event. All of this is forgotten. You're lucky if you have a good sound system. So it's the juxtaposition, is just kind of sitting there watching this going, man, this is kind of hilarious how much time we're spending on this one light cue or this tweaking of the trick when the audience really probably won't notice.
Oh, no, of course.
They'll notice if they can't see you, but other than that.
And they notice I was talking to someone about this the other day. It's that Futurama quote. Like, if you do everything right, people won't realize you've done anything at all.
Sure. And that's what you're trying to get to.
Yeah.
Wow, that was really good. I don't know why it was really good.
They would just be enraptured by the experience. Not even realize all the... amount of work.
Them to say, that was pretty good despite everything you were dealing with.
Yeah. I liked that bit where he lit the card really well, because that means they're not so caught up in the experience, they're not even thinking about it.
Totally.
It's still good. It's better than I disliked that dumb moment where he lit the card that way.
Yeah.
It's better than that.
Yeah, it's finding the little details of, you know, what's worth fighting for and what is not in those type of situations.
Yeah.
But
so are we trying to split this into two episodes? Do we want to?
I think we're going to try because, I mean, unless we just run out of completely ideas. So this episode will wrap up in about 5 minutes.
Okay, but cool. We're obviously going to edit this bit out.
The viewers won't know.
I assume this bit gets cut.
If I do my job well. If they don't notice the lighting cue.
Is it better to leave this in as a little behind the scenes insight into?
I can leave everything in. I stopped editing a long time ago.
I haven't listened to an episode in a long time.
Neither have I. I edited it once and just put it out. Like, we'll have people come up and go, hey, that was funny when you said this thing. I was like, we said that thing?
That was the thing we said?
I'm sorry. That was a really terrible thing to say.
That's the struggle is real.
My buddy Taylor Hughes, who has a great podcast called About to Break, he goes through and edits stuff and cleans things up. And I'm like, that's nice. What's that like?
That's, what does it mean about to break? As in about to break out into something something good? Or
break into the industry or whatever, that entertainment.
Right.
All capacities. He interviews magicians, musicians, and people in art, writers, things like
that.
Break into the industry before it breaks you. That's kind of his tagline.
I see.
It's good. Yeah. It's very good. Good show. And he's I've done it a couple times, and he's been nice enough to fill in for you on the show.
Yeah.
He's a good man.
I think that was actually the one episode I listened to about 2/3 of before I forgot. I was driving at the time, and I got to my destination. I put it on while driving. I thought I should listen to this. Like, mm-hmm. you've said good things about Taylor, and it was good. I was enjoying it, and then I got to wherever I was driving and then just forgot to listen to the rest of it.
I've been doing that more and more. I don't fault people for not finishing episodes or anything like that, because it's something to pass the time, whether you're traveling or driving. I used to listen to so many episodes living in Florida when I had no friends, and my dogs and my wife were my only friends. Yeah. And now I'm like, I'll listen to podcasts when I need to, or when I need to pick me up, or when I really want to hear some insightful conversations.
Yeah.
I can't absorb as much as I used to. No. So I don't fault people for not listening to all of our episodes.
That was a rule I made for myself a long, long time ago, probably way more than a decade ago. And it wasn't really a rule I made. It was just a truth I observed. But it's important to remind yourself that no one ever, for a split second, owes you their time or their attention or their giving a shit about you or what you do. No one owes you, never judging anyone for not knowing anything about you or giving the slightest shit about you or what you do. No one owes you that, ever. Not once. When someone does give a damn about who you are or what you do, that's a glorious thing to be celebrated and appreciated. But it's like, so if someone's like, oh, sorry, I didn't realize, I'm like, why are you apologizing? It's the most ridiculous thing to apologize for.
I was getting really, I went on a rant yesterday during my set at the Magic Bar about how people always call me Paul by accident.
Yeah.
And I could tell it was making everybody very uncomfortable, but then I realized, and I called it out too, and I realized exactly what you're saying. The fact that they even remember part of your name is lovely. It's amazing.
It's fantastic.
But it's just like, God damn it. I have both names in the email signature. Why are you going to that one? And then I was working a show I've done for a couple of years now. One of the security guys walks by and was asking me, hey, Paul, how you doing? I was like, been doing this show for 2 years.
To be fair, in their hypothetical defense, I mean, you know, some people call me Coronel, right? Hey, Coronel. But, you know, so this idea of calling a person by their surname is a thing culturally.
I know that's not the case for me, but I'll tell you. And there's no reason to get mad. The fact that anybody, like you said, even remembers you is taking the
beautiful
time.
Beautiful thing.
Yeah. That's true.
Imagine going through life being bothered that someone doesn't remember you or doesn't care for what you do or doesn't give a shit. You'd be constantly tortured, because there will always be far more people that don't know and don't care than people who do.
I think that's why I thought a lot about this, because that's why I stopped, among not being good, I've stopped acting, because I got sick of walking into an audition room and being generic white guy and being forgotten immediately.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I gravitated towards solo performance more and being more in control, because you can find ways to make people to remember you and really experience the quote unquote entertainment that you're giving them. And I used to get mad. I'm like, why don't people remember me? But maybe you're not being memorable. Maybe you're not doing anything worth remembering by. So I think that is something to keep in mind if you're somebody like me who gets frustrated when people call you Paul or just, who are you?
Okay, what's the...
That's clearly, I think, on your end. You're making yourself... One of my favorite lines... I'm a big... my wife and I are big Bare Naked Ladies fans, band.
Well, it's because you're people of taste and sophistication.
Clearly. One of my favorite lyrics of theirs is, if I hide myself wherever I go, am I ever really there?
Yeah.
And I relate to that so much in my life, because I've done so many things. And then I don't know if I've spent the time meeting people or really getting to exist in the actual situation or leave too early. I don't know. It's... something I've spent a lot of time thinking about.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Completely. I mean, it gets into the whole tree falling in the woods gets existential, doesn't it?
Ooh, bringing it back to the beginning. Right. That's a good time to wrap up the first episode. See, we can do it if we try.
Boom. Isn't that another we can do it, we can make it if we try? Isn't that a song lyric? That rings a bell.
Just the two of us?
Yes, that's it. I'd forgotten about that.
The Will Smith version or the Austin Powers version? Or the version that was before both of those?
Probably I honestly have no idea. That just sprung into my brain. I was like, this sounds familiar somehow.
This is a good lyric. This is
a quote from something. Oh, it's a song. That's right.
And on that note, episode one is wrapping up. Thanks for listening, everybody.
It's been a pleasure.
Thanks so much for listening to the show. Please give us 5 stars on Apple Podcast. If you really like the show, you can donate a few bucks a month on our website, twomagiciansonemike.com, or become a monthly subscriber through our Patreon link. Thanks to all the people that support the show and keep it up and running. Be sure to follow us on the interwebs at @twomagiciansonemike. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great week.